All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fuck nicks? What's happening? Welcome. What's going on? How are you? Today on the show, I talked to Zahn McLaren. Great guy. Great to work with that guy. You know, you guys have seen him in the second season of Fargo, Westworld, Longmire, Dark Winds. And he plays Officer Big on Reservation Dogs. He's been in a couple of Sterling Harjo movies. But I got to work with him on Res Dogs, and it was great. He's a great actor, and he's funny, and he can also be very intense. I've seen him in many roles. Dude can be scary, but as Big on Res Dogs, a unique frequency of humor. I was very happy that he agreed to do the show. I talked to him about it when we shot. And as I've said before, it was such a great time to do that show. It was really one of the great experiences of my life as an actor. Speaking of which, To Leslie is out. You can get it on demand. You can see it in a theater, a few, if it's near you. It's kind of exciting. It's got a 97% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. And no one has said I sucked, which is nice. I mean, people don't usually say I suck, but they usually don't say anything. I'm not sure what's worse. But it's been all around great. Also, I'll be on Corden tonight, I believe. I know I'm recording it today. Those of you in London, there are still tickets for our live taping of WTF at the Bloomsbury Theater on Wednesday, October 19th. I'll be talking with comedian and writer and Jew, David Baddiel. You can go to WTFpod.com/tour for tickets. Also, for those of you signed up for WTF Plus, we've officially satisfied all our promotional commitments that we had prior to the launch, so all episodes of the WTF archives are now completely ad-free. And for those of you who already subscribed, thanks for your patience while those few ads hung around. And for the rest of you, now is a great time to subscribe. You get every WTF episode ad-free, and full Marin subscribers get bonus content every week. Go to the episode description on your podcast app and click on the link to subscribe, or go to WTFpod.com and click WTF Plus. So I worked last weekend. I don't want to go through the whole thing again because I can't really understand how to explain it. And I'm only trying to explain it if people can sort of relate to it. There are times when my anxiety is compounded. My inability to compartmentalize makes a tsunami of small things turn into one large sort of massive anxiety fire. And I've got to travel this week. And next week, but I traveled last weekend. I was in Livermore, great show up there in Wine Country, I think it is. It's unclear. We drove up, me and Bites drove the car up as opposed to fly, drove up the five, one of the worst drives. Interstate 5 between here and the Bay Area, horrendous. It's like driving on Mars until you reach the cows, and then it's like driving through Mars if Mars smelled like manure. And then at some point you reach Anderson's Pea Soup, and you ask yourself, has anyone had pea soup at Anderson's? Why is that place still there? Why is that sign still there? Who the fuck drives on Mars in 98 degree weather in this sort of dusty, shit-smelling strip of highway and think that, like, oh, wow, pea soup sounds good? This is a very regional and very specific reference, but if you knew, you would know that Anderson's Pea Soup on Mars has been there forever, and I don't know anyone who's eaten there. Someone must. I don't know. What? It can't be a front out there in the middle of fucking no. It doesn't matter. So we drove up, and those shows were good. But the problem was, last week, as I told you, on Tuesday afternoon, my cat, my new cat, the kitten, Charlie Beans Roscoe, just stopped eating and was pukey. And look, I've owned many cats. I've had cats disappear. I've put cats down. I've had sick cats. I've hospiced cats. But it makes no difference. When one of them gets sick, it's just horrendous for me. Because I just assume that this is it. And you just sort of like, why'd I get a dud? Why do I got a dud cat? But this cat's great. I mean, arguably Sammy might be a dud, but that's another story. But he's all right. I'll figure it out. We'll work it out. We've got like probably 15, 20 years. So, but then, Charlie's sick and I got to go out of town and I'm using, you know, I'm having, you know, cat sitters come over and sometimes people stay here. But the whole thing is if I'm not here, I freak out. And this cat, I'm just getting reports back. He's still not eating. He's still a little pukey. And I'm sure he's going to die. And I'm on the road. So everything sort of runs through that. I was stressed out and I was almost incapable of wrangling it. Okay. And everything looked horrendous and life did not seem worth living. Triggered all by my kitten being sick and not eating. So the day that we drove home from the Bay Area, from Carmel by the Sea, I was waiting to hear, you know, whether the cat ate. And then I heard back from a vet, the vet who I took him to, who I said, you know, he's still sick. And that guy's like, well, you got to take him to an emergency hospital. It needs a different type of treatment. So I'm like, I got it in my head. I'm going to be home for just a few days. And I'm just going to hope that this fucking kitten doesn't die or whatever's happening. And I got to take him to the hospital today. And he'll probably have to be there overnight. And it's just going to be a fucking cortisol fucking shit show through till the time I leave. And then maybe even when I'm gone. That's where I was at. And then I got another email that said, Charlie ate. He ate well. And I'm like, oh, my God. It was like it had all been lifted off. It was one of the better feelings in life. It was all lifted. The cat's okay. Everything is okay. It all went away. And I started to realize, like, if I looked over my life at all the stress and all the shit I put myself through mentally, anxiety, fear, my imagination, when left untethered, is really just going to generate amazing things to make me feel shitty and panicky. And what do I get out of that? Why do I let my brain do that? Why does my brain do that? Is the relief that good? Is that what life is? I'm having a good day because I was able to stop beating the shit out of myself for a few hours. And also, a couple of things weren't as bad as I thought they would be. That's a great day? Wow. It comes and goes. And I've got the capacity to put my blinders up and not react to things I'm making up or my brain is making up without my consent. And, you know, just stay the line. Hold the line. Mentally, trick I learned from meditating the short period I did it. But I don't let thoughts drift by. I stop them and realize, dude, that's your brain. This is your car. That's your brain. That's the road. That's your brain. Look at your fingers. That's your brain. Hey, move your seat up a little. That's your brain. This is me choosing a song to play on the radio. The difference between what's happening in the immediate reality versus the just fucking screaming shit show of my brain, the screaming shit show of panic, anxiety, and fear is profound, obviously. So all that to say, Charlie's okay. He's eating a lot. I don't know what the fuck it was. I don't know if it was a cleaning product or just being a young cat. I'm a little nervous now. See, that's where I went. That's what I did. I thought, this has got to be a cleaning product. I think it's that thing that the cleaning lady brings with her, that yellow fucking stuff. I've got to get products. I've got to have a totally plant-based, fucking pet-friendly cleaning product arsenal. There can be nothing made with bad chemicals. That's what I decided. So that's the whole thing. I'm panicking about cleaning products. How do I eco my cleaning products? I want a reason. But Charlie's okay. They're all okay. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. What can I tell you? It's very exciting. It's very exciting. Zahn McLaren is here. He's in Reservation Dogs. I did an episode with him. That show is streaming now on Hulu. Great show. And now this is me talking to Zahn McLaren. You know what it's like talking to a mic?
I'm working on a cartoon right now.
You are?
No.
What do you play? A snail or a rabbit or a wolf?
I play a... Yeah, right. A vampire.
A vampire.
Like an Aztecan vampire.
Oh, they had to make it a brown vampire.
Yeah. Brown with green eyes. I know. That's what they do now.
That's right. Know. Everyone has to be represented.
Yes.
In the vampire cartoons.
Inclusion.
We need the Aztec.
He's got to be a real native and indigenous person.
Yeah. Know? So he comes from a long line of horrendous human sacrifice and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that all in the backstory?
Not really. It's a show called, I don't know, fuck, am I supposed to talk about this?
Oh.
Yeah, I think so.
Is it done?
I don't know. They just keep calling me back in.
That's the way animation is. Yeah, when is this going to be over?
I know. It's like...
You don't even see the whole script.
And I actually think every time I'm in there, I'm like, is this it?
Yeah.
They say, good to see you on again. We'll see you later. And then, you know, I get a call.
Just a few more. We've added more stuff.
Yeah.
We understand the character better.
Yeah.
So my episode, you're on a lot of the episodes, but our episode of...
Are you on now? Are we on?
Res Dogs. Oh, yeah, we're on. Right. Yeah, we've done. We're almost done.
Dude, I love this shroom, man.
Someone made that for me. A fan made that for me.
You ever done psilocybin?
Sure I have, once or twice, but I don't think I did it with the right spirit.
Yeah.
Not in terms of, you know, who was guiding me or I just don't think I was younger.
Yeah.
I was in college. I was, not really a fully formed self yet.
Sure.
So I was just sort of like, fuck it, let's trip. And, I just freaked out. Didn't ride the wave.
I think the psychedelics are wasted on the youth.
That for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, did you do them?
I've done recently, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, for...
Medicinal reasons?
Medicinal.
Now, let's talk about that for a minute. Like, but when you do it medicinally, do you trip balls or do you just take a bit? I mean, it's not clear to me what microdosing means. It means you just trip a little?
No, this wasn't microdosing. This was...
Full on?
Full on, but with a sitter and somebody who's...
A sitter?
Yeah.
Shroom sitter?
Yeah. So, somebody who's got a degree in... You know.
Shrooming?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, the guy's...
Dr. Shroom? Is that a thing?
Guy sat with hundreds of people before. But no, just somebody who's trained in psychedelics and
trained in psychedelics?
Well, not just like...
No, I get it. Where did he get that?
He comes from... I can't remember what school he comes from.
Yeah.
But he's just somebody that... walks you through it, and you know you do it for specific reasons. There's a whole, you know, whole outline that you do. You know,
oh yeah,
especially when you know my past with, you know, being sober for 22 years now.
Yeah, you would think there'd have to be some framework there.
Yeah, definitely.
A lot of work.
But you know, that's how I got sober, was through psychedelics, was through mescaline,
really?
Peyote. Yeah, that's how I kicked. Heroin.
Yeah, through peyote.
Yeah, well, it was one of the first, it was like an underlying base that I started off on, was peyote meetings. And then, you know, I got back into 12-step programs as well.
Yeah.
Which is...
How long did it take you to kick the peyote?
It's almost like the last thing you want to go do again. It's so non-addictive. It's just like psilocybin. It's like, I don't want to go do another set.
Yeah.
I mean, what I went through and...
When did you get sober?
2000.
So it's been a while.
Yeah.
So, but talk me through this mushroom thing when you say, because like when you say you go for a reason.
Yeah.
Like I did some EMDR therapy, you know, which is the buzzers and the light, whatever, however they do it. And it seems to me that's trauma focused. And if you know what the trauma is and you can get there, you know, you can move through it through that process.
Right.
And I think it's helpful. So when you do a guided psilocybin trip for a specific reason, what kind of reason and what's the process?
I personally did it for health reasons. I had some underlying issues I've been dealing with.
Okay.
And that fear of death has crept up quite a bit in the last few years.
And
I was having a hard time dealing with it.
Really?
And that was like, the main reason I went and did a set, yeah.
How was it manifesting? Panic?
Panic, anxiety. The fact that it just all of a sudden is right here on an everyday basis instead
sure.
of somewhere.
You know what
the
I find
future.
Helps with that?
What's that?
Thinking about killing yourself.
Yeah.
You always have control over that thing.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But so how did it help? Did it help?
It did help quite
really?
A bit. Yeah.
What did the guy tell you?
He didn't tell me anything, really.
Were you just tripping? He's like, grow up.
Yeah.
Get it together.
He slapped me on the hand a few times.
But being a baby.
No,
we're all dying.
Just, you get to a mindset when you're under an influence of that medicine. And I do call it medicine.
Yeah. And you have to.
Where you kind of realize that there's not a big difference between here and there.
Hmm.
You know, it's kind of...
Well, one you're awake for.
Yeah.
I'm assuming we're not
it's
the same awake.
Yeah, it's very difficult to obviously put into words. You hear that quite often.
Sure.
But it's
but it helped you in that moment.
It calmed me down. It calmed me down quite a bit.
And it stuck.
Yeah, but what I do now is the meditation to kind of integrate that experience on a daily basis, if that makes sense.
Sure.
I go back there when I'm meditating
yeah.
and remember the experience, and that experience never leaves me.
That experience of almost a spiritual understanding of what was implied by that.
Mm-hmm.
That there's not much difference.
Yeah, it's Pollan talks about it a lot. It's just a reboot of the system and kind of resets you.
Oh,
and,
yeah?
And yeah, it did quite a bit for me. Just the things that are really important to you in your life, you realize,
yeah.
I think about that.
Yeah.
And it is that important. And it just realigns you a bit to what's important.
How long does the reboot really last, though? I find that reboots in general only last as long as to when I upload all my old shit. Clear the disk, and then it's like, well, I got to keep this stuff. And,
yeah, exactly. That's where the meditation comes in for me on a daily basis.
Keep the clean reboot going.
Yeah, exactly.
And it works?
Yeah, it's worked quite a bit.
So our episode of Res Dogs is on Wednesday.
Yeah.
I have no idea. Did you get to watch any of them?
You know, I haven't watched any of them this season.
Me neither.
Yeah. Hulu kicked me off.
Really?
Hey, Hulu, if you're listening, man, give me
get
back,
back on
subscription.
Yeah, what happened?
You know, you get those bundles.
Oh.
And
you lost Hulu?
I lost Hulu on the bundle.
Huh. It must have been because you rebooted. Now you're not supposed to care.
I guess. I don't know. But I was pissed off. I was calling Hulu. So Hulu,
you
give me back
phone?
My damn... Huh?
You used a phone to call him?
Yeah, I actually called.
Work?
No, I called account for... It's Disney, ESPN Plus, and Hulu.
Okay. And they answered their phone and had customer service and all that?
Yeah. And they said, well, we've had quite a few problems like this in the past. And
shit.
We're getting... You know, a lot of people are getting booted off. I said, well, do something about it. And they haven't done anything about it. So I'm going to have to renew my subscription to Hulu to watch Res Dogs.
Watch your dog.
Yeah.
It's such a funny show. Is that the funniest role you've done, would you say, as a character? Is that guy the funniest guy?
Yeah.
I would right?
say so, yeah.
Because he's so uniquely funny.
Yeah, it was something that I was kind of thrown into at the last minute. And
really?
Yeah, I kind of just... said, okay, I don't know what the fuck I'm going to do here. Let's just jump off and see what happens. And, you know, I base the character on people I grew up around and stuff, but...
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it was... that wasn't my job. I was supposed to play Uncle Brownie Sterling.
Oh, really? You were supposed to play Gary's part?
Yeah, I was supposed to play Gary's part.
Huh.
And he wrote that part for me, Sterling did, and something happened when they were shooting the pilot. One of the actors got COVID.
Uh-huh.
And... he called me up. I was up in Montana and hiking, and Sterling's like, Zahn, I need you a big favor from you. I'm like, what's up, Sterling? He's like, can you fly here tomorrow and do this part? And I was like, how much you gonna pay me?
No,
I was happy to. I'm glad it worked out that way. I love playing big and
well, the thing is that like it must have been based on that, you know, him needing you and you going down there. They didn't know how big that character was going to be. But I imagine, like, you know, after you did it, they're like, no, we got to put a lot of this guy in.
Yeah, Sterling's amazing. You know, I've watched him kind of grow up and
well, I, the first time and, I saw you, I think really and noticed was in that movie Miko.
Miko, yeah.
And I was like, holy fuck, that guy means business. I'm not, that guy's scary
that,
guy.
That was one of the only parts that I really felt fucking dirty after I got done doing.
Yeah?
It took me a couple days to shake that one. It was weird, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there was moments where I'm like spitting and beating on somebody in the alley. And
yeah.
I cut and I'll go off and I'm like, tear coming out of my eye. It just, it was...
Oh, because you had to go there, right?
Yeah.
So, but I mean, that was really, I mean, if I'm recalling correctly, an incarnation of an evil spirit is yeah, the way he played
exactly
it.
What it was. It was a witch, I'm pronouncing it wrong, Skanigi.
Uh-huh.
I think it's pronounced Skanigi in Creek.
Okay.
I always get that wrong, but...
Yeah.
Sorry, Sterling.
If he'll be all right. He'll be... As long as among you guys, and I don't do it.
I remember being on the set trying to say that word. He'd be screaming off, "Skanigi!"
Because he's Creek.
Creek, yeah, Creek Seminole.
And you are
Lakota, Standing Rock Sioux, Hunkpapa.
Yeah, Hunkpapa. Yeah,
if you would, you know, most people don't understand Hunkpapa Lakota, so you say Standing Rock Sioux. Everybody knows Standing Rock.
Yeah.
Everybody knows the tribe Sioux.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a derogatory word.
Is it?
Yeah. We were named, it's a longer word than Sioux, but it was the French and another tribe up in northern Minnesota that named us Sioux. It means something like, kind of in a journal way, something that crawls on the ground. Or
it's a native slang. Between
yeah, it's something that's
native
like sneaky
people.
Or,
oh yeah,
or, yeah. The tribe that I can't remember the tribe. The it's a French kind of tribe. French
oh yeah,
tribe. But they named us that because they didn't. You know, they. Kind
that's
of
why you get the
down
like the OUIX.
Yeah,
is sort of a French
exactly.
trip.
Yeah, Sioux. So it's yeah. kind of a dirty word.
So that's why it comes from slang.
Yeah, we call ourselves Lakotas.
Lakotas.
Yeah, there's Nakota, Dakota, and Lakota.
Those are the three cultures?
Yeah, it's the three the languages, the different types of languages within the Lakota people.
Is that where Dakota comes from?
Yeah. Dakota is just a version of the language. I'm not putting in the right words.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a dialect of the language.
Well, yeah.
They use the D's and the Lakota use the L's and the Nakota, which the girl on Res Dogs,
yeah.
Alexis, is Nakota from Canada,
uh-huh.
who plays Willie Jack.
She's great.
She's awesome, man.
She's very funny.
Yeah.
So where did you grow up?
I grew up in Montana, Wyoming, and Nebraska.
Was so, but any reservation life?
Yeah, my grandparents lived in Browning, Montana, which is the Blackfeet Reservation. They left North Dakota, the Standing Rock Reservation,
yeah.
in the 50s.
Yeah.
And moved up to Browning, Montana. And basically, my mom was born on the res in Fort Yates, North Dakota. And my grandfather got a job on the Blackfeet Res as
yeah.
a mechanic. So he moved his whole family from Fort Yates to Browning in the 50s. So all my aunts and uncles are still up there. My mom's brothers and sisters
are so on the Browning Reservation.
Yeah, they've married into the Blackfeet tribe, but they're like a family of Lakotas that live on the Blackfeet Reservation. So I grew up 20 miles off the reservation.
So is that unusual for multiple tribes to be sort of?
No. I mean, not really.
Yeah.
You know? My grandfather got a job offer and he stayed up there.
Is there that kind of tension? Is there tribal tension?
Sure. I mean, there's like joking in between tribes.
Yeah.
And, you know, like the Pine Ridge, the Ogallala Lakota will make jokes about the Rosebud Sioux, the Sikonju
yeah.
Lakota, you
right,
know, and
right.
that kind of stuff. The yeah. Crees and the Blackfeet will joke around.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah. So there's a lot of teasing involved, but not anymore. I think the Pawnee were a rival enemy of the Lakota, and so were the Crow, but, you know, it's just more teasing and stuff like that.
Right now.
Yeah.
As opposed to territorial
yeah.
kind
yeah.
of, yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
So, I mean, what's your earliest memories of, because I can't, you know, when you watch something like Reservation Dogs, you know, as a white guy, you kind of realize, like, I have no idea how Native people live at currently or any other way. I mean, like, I talked to Sterling about it. I read a book years ago called On the Res, which I thought was good, but it was written by a white guy.
Yeah, I've read the Ian Fraser.
Yeah. And there was a lot of things in it that made me really appreciate that outside of whatever type of conditions the Natives are living in, there is a way about life that is thoroughly unique to them.
Yeah.
You know, and I think Sterling captures that.
He does. Very much so. You know, the humor especially.
Yeah.
Which has never really been done on a TV show before, ever. There's so much humor involved within the culture and, and people, family. It's just like all cultures. There's just, there's that bonding, but there's a lot of joking and teasing around. I mean, that's where, you know, shit ass comes from, is is my uncle, my grandma, he used to call me a little shit ass all the time.
So you brought that in?
Yeah, I brought that. I was improvising a scene with the kids, the meat pie stand, and I walked off and I said, goddamn shit asses, and it just became a kind of a thing.
A running thing?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, all of it, the thing that I notice the most is it's the humor, it's the food, it's the way the generations respect each other.
Yeah.
There's a spirituality that's broad and animated.
Yeah.
And it's completely outside of our experience.
Yeah.
And do you find, when you think back about being on the reservation when you were a kid, do you remember being awful or good?
Do I personally?
Yeah.
You know, I had this thing where, because my dad was a Washichu, which we call, that's what we say in my language. It's my language.
But,
but I don't speak it fluently.
Yeah.
So my language is obviously English.
You know some words. It's a word from the language that is mine.
He's a Washichu. He's a white guy.
Oh, he is.
So, So I'm mixed.
Yeah.
And
where's he from?
He's from Denver, Colorado.
Denver?
Yeah. He's an little Irishman. Looks like Santa Claus. Or he was. He's dead now.
So now, did you get along with that guy?
Yeah, well, he was pretty cool. Old hippie beatnik guy. Old beatnik.
Oh, really?
Worked at a jazz station in the 50s back in Denver, and then...
Well, Neil Cassidy was a Denver guy, I think.
Neil Cassidy, there was... he used to have Dizzy Gillespie over for dinner.
Oh, really?
I think he had... I know he met Miles.
Oh, yeah? So he's a jazz guy?
He was a jazz guy, but became like a hippie guy.
Yeah.
He's actually one of the one of the first people in their late 60s to early 60s to become a part of Native American Church, which is Peyote Way. He met my mom in Denver. They had me and my twin brother and my older brother in Denver, and they went and lived on a commune in outside of Santa Fe, New Mexico. And then my little brother was born down there, and then
in
we
Posidas?
Went
there.
No, in
Algodones.
I can never remember. It's right between Taos and Santa Fe, Embudo.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Okay. It's a little community. It was a commune. They took us down
but
there,
but not a Native commune, just a hippie.
No,
commune.
It was a hippie camp. But yeah, they were. It was partly Native American Church, which is Peyote Way.
Peyote Way, which is
Native American Church, is called.
Oh, but does it have something? What's it got to do with peyote?
Well, that's the sacrament, the medicine that they use
every week.
Not really. Not every week.
No. So it's not like they do with the wafer.
They might do
in
it
the on Sundays in the Catholic Church.
No, they don't sit there and eat the wafer.
Here's your peyote button for your Sunday. Enjoy the next 12 hours.
Yeah, it's quite a ceremony. It does last for 12 hours, but it's quite a beautiful ceremony.
Now
he went up to Montana anyway. Anyway.
Where are your memories at? Do you remember the commune? How old were you?
I don't remember the commune.
You have a twin brother and an older brother?
I have an older brother and a younger brother.
A twin brother, an older brother, and younger brother.
Yeah. My older brother is Rory, which is a good Irish
name.
That's
a great Irish name.
Rory Chitamuzza, which is means Iron Hawk. That's his middle name.
Yeah.
My twin is 4 minutes younger than me.
4 minutes.
And
do you hold that over him?
Yeah. You have no idea. the things we're going through in our 50s now because of that.
Really?
Know? Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy.
You were dealing with it. Yeah. I love him. He's such a beautiful guy.
What's his name?
Is a Hakeku, which means the last one to come out.
So you didn't do it.
Mine was the first to come. So,
really?
Yeah. Yes, Tokaheku.
And your mom did that?
Yeah. And my little brother's spotted horse, which is Toshunka Gleshka, which means spotted horse. His name is Che.
Uh-huh.
Named after Che Guevara.
Okay.
And now he's kind of a little bit on the right wing side.
Oh, yeah.
So he's like, don't call me Che anymore.
not around these people.
No, he's like, my name's Gerald Jr. And I say, okay, Che. I mean, he grew up with that name. You know, but Montana was basically my first memories. I grew up in Glacier National Park, which is 20 miles off the res.
So your dad moved up there?
Yeah, to work for the National Park Service.
Really?
So I lived in Yellowstone for a couple of years.
No kidding.
Glacier National Park. I lived in Cuyahoga Valley National Recreation Area.
I know a guy, my friend Dean, he was born in Yosemite.
Oh, yeah.
His old man was a park guy.
Yeah, it was, you know, private, you know, government schools. Our schools were like 30 people in there, just government employees.
And what'd your dad do on the park?
He was a trash truck driver. He started out as a trash truck driver, and he worked his way up to a contract specialist, which is like a GS-14. So he worked his ass off and made a living, great living, and kept advancing and took care of his four boys, you know.
And your mom?
My mom is program.
Yeah.
40 years.
Is that where it came from?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Almost 40 years now. And, She went back to the res and
they stayed married or
They divorced in the 90s, I think. So they were married for 35, 40 years. He's just an old hippie, you know, beatnik guy, you know, and he had a government job. So he had all those values and that state of mind, that way of thinking and working for the man, you know.
But he was in the park.
Yeah, he was in the park. He had to cut his hair. Actually, there was one time when the Park Service hired him to, they were bringing marijuana into Yellowstone back in the 70s, late 70s. And
who was?
Kids. They were just, you know, dealing to the seasonal kids who worked at the stores and stuff, seasonal park rangers.
Yeah.
And they sent my dad undercover because the way he kind of looked, his hair was a little bit long, that. But they sent him undercover because, you know, he had experience doing that stuff, being a beatnik. But he was an interesting human being.
He didn't have the bug, though.
You know, I think he had the bug. He just was able to kind of keep it under control.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Sure.
I just remember seeing him a handful of times, really, really loaded. He just took care of us, you know.
Violence.
There was some of that going on. more just the screaming stuff, you know.
On who? From who? Your dad or mom?
Both of them. Yeah, oh, going at him. But
they stayed together for a long time.
Yeah. But my mom is, she lives in Nebraska now, and I was able to set her up quite well. And
that's nice.
She's very comfortable. And
what town?
Omaha.
Uh-huh. What's that? I was just in Lincoln.
Were you?
Yeah.
Go Cornhuskers.
Yeah, it was okay. I did a show there. It was pretty good.
Yeah.
They were happy to have me.
It's a good place. I go back quite often.
There's like 12 people in the whole state, right? It's like, that's what's weird about those big states. When I go play them, I'm like, how many people live in this whole state?
Well, Nebraska is very, very similar to Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably a little, Tulsa's kind of liberal, but Omaha's a pretty liberal town.
Is it?
Yeah.
So when did you come of age? Was it, you know, how much time did you spend on the reservation versus the park? How did that work? Relatives in both places?
Yeah, the thing is, you know, I being half white.
Yes.
And being, you know, on the weekends, my grandparents would take care of me, babysit me, whatever. So you didn't really fit in either place, you know. That,
but
that
was
story.
It looked down upon or judged?
Sure. Who's your family? You know, who are you? You don't look. You know, it's right. Like you don't look full native.
And right.
Where are you from? Are you right. Mexican or?
But what? It seems like the native culture has absorbed a lot of white people.
Oh, definitely. I'm talking about in the 70s. There's
sure.
a little bit more racism in Montana going on, the border towns, et cetera.
From the natives or from the white?
From both sides.
Oh,
both sides.
So you're getting it from both sides.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You're not one of us from both sides.
Yeah. So I spent quite a bit, you know, in being in my culture. When I became of age, like 13, 14
yeah.
years old, I started getting more and more into my culture with ceremonies and attending ceremonies and a Nipi ceremony, which is a sweat lodge.
Yeah.
And sun dancing, which is a very powerful ceremony.
Did you like, but like your old man wasn't part of that, right?
So well, he's part of Native
uncles?
American church in the 60s.
Sure. Oh, okay, yeah.
And he put it away because he was white and
right.
kind of said, I need to respect this and leave it to Native people for the ceremony.
So you'd go with your mother's family and do the business.
Yeah, you know, when I lived in Nebraska, I started getting into more into my culture when I was 12, 13
yeah.
years, going to ceremonies and stuff like that. And my mom pointed me that way.
Right.
You know, she always supported it. And
you have uncles and cousins, I imagine?
Got uncles and cousins. Most of them are up in Browning. My close
still?
Ones are. Yeah, they're still up in Browning, Blackfeet Res.
What's the situation up there now? Like, I mean, what is it like, you know, in terms of living conditions and, you know, how does it feel? Do you know? Is
there's,
there
a, I mean, there's a lot of community up yeah. there, but you know, the living conditions are. It's in the middle of the plains in Montana,
yeah.
right below the Rocky Mountains, and it's
yeah.
cold, and you know, there's not a lot of money, and they've
yeah.
got a brand new casino up there, and it's kind of become
the thing,
the cultural.
Does it spread the money around?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know the politics up
yeah.
there in Browning. You know
yeah,
how that
yeah.
goes, but does it? Doesn't seem like it does. I don't know how all that
yeah,
works. I really
sure.
don't. I've never really.
But your people are relatively comfortable?
My mom is comfortable.
In Omaha, right.
Yeah.
But the cousins, you know, whatever's going on.
They're fine. Yeah.
Yeah, they're
fine.
So where do you go wrong? When does that start to happen?
Where do I go wrong? When I moved to the city for the first time.
Yeah. Which city?
Nebraska. Omaha, Nebraska.
Oh, it's Omaha. The hard streets of Omaha.
Yeah. I like had an alley
yeah.
behind my house. I'd never seen an alley before, but I was hear about alleys and
sure.
you know, I hit the streets running, man.
Well, how old were you when you got there?
I was 10 or 11.
And your whole family moved there?
Yeah.
In Omaha. So that was after Browning,
that
after
was
Glacier
that was
the
after
Park?
Montana, after Yellowstone, after Ohio for 2 years.
Ohio.
And yeah, I lived in...
what was your dad chasing in Ohio?
That was a national park. They opened
another
up a
park, huh?
national park there
oh, yeah.
called Cuyahoga Valley National uh-huh. Recreation Area, which is right south of Cleveland.
Uh-huh.
Beautiful, beautiful
yeah, yeah,
area.
Yeah.
So we moved out there. That's actually the first time I smoked weed.
Up there in Ohio?
Yeah. Mm. I was like 10. I think I was fifth grade. Can't believe
sure,
that shit.
Sure, sure. What year
grade.
Was this? So 70s?
79, 78.
There's a weird thing, you know, all you needed was one older kid.
Yeah. But I was drawn to those kids, man.
Sure,
I was
man.
Like, oh, these guys are cool.
Oh, yeah.
Fit right in.
Cigarettes.
Oh, my God.
Weed.
Cigarettes.
Everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was... Yeah, because then there was still like some of those. It wasn't the hippies, but it was that generation just post,
yeah.
just rock and roll guys.
Yeah, oh yeah. Well, WMMS, home of rock and roll, Cleveland.
Yeah,
you know, the home of the buzzard.
Yeah,
and, you know, started listening to rock music. And
yeah, man,
it's a great time.
So you get to Omaha and you hit the alley.
Oh, I hit the streets running.
All the families there. So like, how about your brothers? They turned
yeah,
out all right. Everybody good?
No, we all hit the streets running.
Oh yeah. The crew.
Yeah, with the crew. But it was an experience. You know, I never. You know, I literally grew up in the woods.
Coming into the city, you mean?
Yeah, coming in the city. It was just the public schools and. Just a brand new experience.
Yeah.
And I loved it.
Yeah.
I had fun. I was like, you know, got out of those damn woods.
And was there a good, was there a pretty big Native population
yeah,
in Omaha?
Yeah, Omaha's got a big, big Native population. The Omaha Res is about 40 miles north of Omaha. So there's a lot of big community in Omaha.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So wait, so when do you start realizing, how long between hitting the streets running and is it before you hit the wall and or figure out that you want to, you know, something do some different. Acting?
I hit the wall pretty quick.
Yeah.
Literally, I was 15, I think.
Oh, yeah?
15 years old when I first, my first one.
Tried to get sober?
Yeah. Hmm. It was a strange period. It was 82.
Were you, that was when you got strung out or no?
No, I wasn't. You know, I was, you know, smoking a lot.
Oh, yeah. Just got fucked up.
Weed,
getting busted?
Drinking. And I got busted a few times, yeah. They threw me in jail. I was 15 years old.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Literally sitting in county jail. I'm like,
this ain't good.
You can't put him in jail. 15. And they're scaring the shit out of me is what they're doing. So they gave me alternative.
Yeah.
You go do this or you go do that.
Yeah.
You know, and I took the drug rehab.
Oh, you did at 15?
Yeah. So it started there, you know.
How long did you stay sober that time?
A few years.
Oh, man. Yeah?
Yeah, we had a really cool pocket of young people in AA in Nebraska.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool.
Sure.
Yeah, and we had a lot of fun, and we all still some of my best friends. Some of them are still actually sober.
From that first time?
Yeah.
Wow.
They're all in Omaha, yeah.
That's wild. That's
it is crazy.
Yeah, man.
I mean, that's a whole story in itself. Somebody should write a book about that. The young people in AA in the early 80s when the drug rehabs were opening up and these you know, court systems were throwing these young kids who get caught smoking weed in high school and throwing them in there.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of them didn't really have a problem. You know,
sure.
And now they're kind of normal people, but they base their life on that stuff that they learned, and you know, they've taken it and they've gone other directions with it. I mean, they still are normal,
right?
They're just normal people,
right?
You know?
They don't have a problem.
Yeah, they never had a real
problem.
Also,
they got to experience that, like, because back then it was still like just their one program, dude.
Yeah.
Right? One program.
And that was it.
So you had to deal with these old AA assholes that didn't even want you talking about drugs.
I know, right?
Right?
Yeah, they didn't. You know, I spilled more than you drank. All that shit. And we used to go to conferences and stuff all over the country, and young people's conferences.
Oh, you locked in.
Oh, we locked in for a few years there, and we went to Founders Day and met Lois and
Bill's wife?
Bill's wife.
Wow, you did the whole thing.
The whole fan club. Went to the 50th anniversary. I didn't go. I didn't make it. I stayed in Ohio to hang out with some friends, but all my buddies went up to the 50th anniversary in, I think it was in Montreal.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because didn't it start in Ohio?
Yeah, it started in Akron, Ohio.
Yeah, Akron.
Yeah.
So what, did you start doing any acting in that time?
No.
What took you back out?
Girls.
That was it?
Just being young.
Because you're 18.
Yeah, I was 18 years old when I went back out and tried some... having some fun. I had a blast, you know. I was just young.
Yeah,
you
know what I mean? And still in Omaha?
Still in Omaha, but ended up down in Phoenix and then into LA in the late 80s.
How'd you end up in Phoenix?
I went to school down there too. What happened was I went back out, then I got sober again and said I want to do something with my life. And I went down to Phoenix, Arizona to go to a electrical school and lived with my aunt down there and fell off again and kind of woke up in Los Angeles. So
that's kind of when
the acting bug started.
So did your brothers get clean?
Yeah.
Yeah? And they all got, they're all doing all right?
They're doing great, man.
That's great.
They're doing great, yeah.
That's kind of fucking wild, right?
Yeah.
So you're in Phoenix going to electrical school and you just end up in LA.
Yeah, I kind of fell off again a little bit.
Yeah, a little?
Yeah, a little bit. And kind of woke up in Los Angeles in the... 86, I think, was the first time.
Oh, my God. That's when I was here.
Yeah.
At the Comedy Store.
Yeah, Guns N' Roses.
Yeah, Sunset Boulevard.
Sunset Boulevard was crazy.
That's where you ended up?
Yeah.
Where were you living?
I lived in my car on Wilcox and Hollywood Boulevard
for a little bit. Out here and you're like, fuck it?
Ended up staying with people, met a girl here, ended up living with her. And
really?
Yeah.
But did you have a plan?
No plan at all.
He was just going to see rock shows?
Going to see rock shows, hanging out in the scene.
Because that scene up there on Sunset and the Roxy and all those places, that was pretty crazy up there.
It was crazy, yeah. It's a lot of fun. It's a pretty unique time. I mean, the Sunset Boulevard in the 60s was pretty magnificent. In the 80s with the
hair metal.
Hair metal.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun, you know. We had good times.
You don't play an instrument, do you?
I play guitar.
You do?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I played more when I was back out there doing my thing, but...
So what, are you just hanging around doing blow and shit?
Yeah, but I did blow a different way. I didn't do it up the nose.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, so it was a special club. You weren't sharing it with many people. It was a solitary endeavor.
Yeah, right.
No hanging around in bathrooms with three guys with ties. No.
Yeah, right.
You're on your own, man.
Yeah, no.
With speedballs?
Yeah, you know, all kinds of stuff, man. I was pretty far into it.
So, but during that time, you didn't really have a plan. You were just, you know, hanging out. Were you working?
No, at that time, I wasn't even thinking about acting. All I was thinking about was
drugs,
having fun, and
doing drugs.
Yeah, so I went back to Nebraska eventually in '89.
All skinny and fucked up.
Skinny and I had a car that literally had a dead battery, and I got to Denver, Colorado, and I'd have to push start it every to get it going. You have to put a little Mazda GLC in it.
And you're running away.
Yeah, I'm going back to Nebraska to try to get my head straight. And I stopped in Denver and saw a cousin of mine. He goes, your battery doesn't work. Yeah. I said, I know that. Just give me a push, man. I got back to Nebraska, and I got clean again and cleaned up in
Nebraska.
And
that stuck? And,
no. No, but that's when I got the acting bug.
But you felt good for a little while.
Yeah, a couple of years. Yeah. I was good. I did some local theater in Nebraska.
Really?
Auditioned for Jesus Christ Superstar.
That was, so, okay, so you clean up, you're a few months
Yeah,
clean.
I was like looking in the paper. I love Jesus Christ Superstar. It's one of my favorite albums ever.
Oh, yeah.
And my dad turned me on to it when I was just a little kid, and I knew every song and every lyric.
Oh, really? Dug into your brain.
Yeah, I did. I'm not Christian. But
good songs, though.
Yeah, great songs. You know what I mean? What was it? Tim Rice.
You don't have to be Christian to love Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yeah, yeah. Ted Neely
Ted Neely with Jesus. So you had the movie soundtrack.
I did.
That your dad played.
Yeah, it was Ian Gillan.
Oh, yeah,
Deep Purple.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Sang Jesus. Ted Neely did the Broadway, and he's still doing it, actually, to this day.
Is he?
Yeah, I met him. I met Ted Neely in the Lemley's Theater.
It's got to be 70-something.
He is.
Yeah.
And he's still kicking out those songs. Man.
Doing Jesus.
Yeah, he's unbelievable. He's done shows in, like, Italy and Europe. And
that's almost a religious suspension of disbelief. To have Ted Neely playing Jesus.
Yeah, he's still doing it, man. He's just, you know, it's kind of, instead of dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, he's more dun-dun-dun.
Oh, sure. Slow it down. Take it down an octave, maybe.
No, he's still kicking out those screams.
So. Oh, yeah?
Anyway, we...
What'd you play?
I was an apostle, man. Mm. Listen, I saw an ad in the paper. They were doing the play at a local community theater across the river in Council Bluffs, Iowa. And I said, I'm going to go audition for this thing. Why not? I can't sing a lick. I can't sing at all.
Yeah.
And I went and I auditioned. I had to sing a song. I did King Herod's song.
Yeah. I love that. So if you are the Christ, you're the great Jesus Christ. Prove to me that you're no fool. Walk across my swimming pool.
Yeah. So I went and did that, and they needed a brown person in the cast. I had long hair.
Even
they were like, I was the only brown kid in the whole cast. And, you know, we're not going to give you a lead, but we're going to allow you to play in the choir and chorus.
Sure.
And be
represent.
An apostle.
Yeah. Go represent.
Yeah. And I fell in love with it, man. I was like, wow, this is fun. You know, the being rehearsal process.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And meeting the people and the camaraderie and the community and then getting up on stage in front of an audience. I enjoyed it. It was fun. And I just started doing local commercials.
Oh, yeah?
In Nebraska.
They had a local kind of casting agent?
They did.
Yeah.
John Jackson, John Durbin, who's an actor. He lived in L.A. and he moved back to Nebraska to do that. And
yeah.
He got me into it, and he introduced me to my first agent in L.A. when I moved out to Los Angeles.
When you moved back?
Yeah, in 90.
So what's that guy doing now, that Jackson guy?
John, he, you know, he, what's the guy from Omaha, the guy who did, great filmmaker. I'm so bad.
Oh, yeah. Jim and,
he did Nebraska.
He used to work with Jim Taylor.
Oh, he's a great filmmaker, great writer. He wrote the...
No, I know, yeah. He's great movies.
Yeah, he's his casting director.
It's going to drive me nuts because I know the guy, and I knew his writing partner.
He did Election.
Yeah, he did all of them. Alexander Payne.
Alexander.
So let me do that like I just remembered. Alexander Payne. Right?
Yeah, Alexander Payne, exactly. Alexander Payne, so John Durbin or John Jackson does cast all of Alexander's movies and stuff. So, and he's still acting as well.
Oh, yeah. I used to know his writing partner on Election and on a couple of a guy named Jim Taylor used to write with...
Oh, really?
With Payne, yeah. But I don't know. He used to be married to Sandra Oh, right? Alexander Payne did. Great movies.
He's brilliant. I think he's brilliant.
Dude, that, the one with...
The family in Hawaii with Clooney.
Oh, The Descendants?
Descendants was great.
Amazing.
Yeah.
But also the Sideways, is that what it's called?
Sideways.
Holy shit.
I know, yeah. That was with Sandra Oh. Yeah.
I can watch that movie over and over
again. Yeah. Yeah, the wine scene sitting drinking.
Oh, when he takes the spit bomb, where he's just like, he finds out that they're not going to make his book.
Yeah. Right.
He just drinks all that spit out of that fucking, just the shame, just bathing in the shame.
Giamatti is brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's where you got it, doing commercials.
Yeah. Commercials, did you, and I came out to
what
back
kind of commercials
out
did they make you do?
I did local community college commercials.
Oh, okay.
I did one for a medical. The University of Omaha Medical School construction worker, you know.
Did you have the long hair the whole time?
I did.
Yeah. So they knew what they were getting.
Yeah, exactly. And then I came back out to L.A. because I had lived here before and I knew some people and, you know, I got on the plane with $200 in my pocket.
Yeah, right. You knew some people that you said, I'm not doing that right
now. I was like in and out in L.A.
Oh, yeah.
So I knew.
Right.
Yeah.
Both.
Both. Yeah, so I knew I had
got
support.
The clean people and the dirty people.
I had some support
out here.
So I got out and got some support for a couple of years and hit the road again, you know.
No shit.
For about 10 years, yeah.
But you were working during that time?
I was.
So, all right, so you get out here, you got representation.
Got representation, which is the difficult thing to do.
Yeah, and are you still with them?
No.
Oh. No. But so you had representation, so you're going out. Now, what's the experience? I mean, is it sort of like we need a native guy?
Yeah, pretty much. Dances with Wolves came out. So we had a thing out here called the American Indian Registry of Performing Arts.
Yeah.
So it was a group of natives from all over the country moved out here to Los Angeles to pursue acting.
Uh-huh.
And we had a registry and everybody would, I was on Hollywood and Highland, we'd all get together and we'd have acting classes. And
really?
You know, the casting people would come to this registry looking for native talent.
Really? And, so you were able to take some classes?
Yeah, some classes.
There? Was that the first time you did it?
Yeah, basically, yeah. And then I started studying with multiple different teachers.
Oh, yeah?
For the last... 30 years.
Oh, so tell me about this what would you call it, an organization?
Yeah, it was just it was called the American Indian Registry of
Still
Performing
around.
Arts. No.
So that was in the 80s?
That was in the early 90s. Late 80s, early 90s. Will Sampson, Wes Studi. These are the people that, you know, I kind of came to L.A. Not Will, but Wes, Gary Farmer.
Yeah.
You know, all these guys were starting off in the early 90s.
So who else? Who was the guy? Who was that guy who was in Dances with Wolves?
Rodney Grant.
Yeah, what happened to that guy?
Rodney's lives up in Northern California. He's married to a tribal member up there.
So how many people? So how many people would you say was in that the registry?
There was probably a few hundred.
No kidding.
Yeah, I mean a lot of them weren't living in Los Angeles at the time, but they would be. Contacted, they have their picture and their resume in the publication.
Sure.
The casting could look at them.
But there's still something kind of awful about the idea that you've got executives going like, well, we're going to need a few natives.
Yeah.
And we'll just go down to
the registry
go,
and
go through the book.
Right, go through the book and find them. Yeah, no, I hear you. But
what are you gonna do?
Now we have, you know, we have native casting directors, and we have, we do actually have native casting directors. Angelique Midthunder's assistant is native. You know Angelique.
I can't tell you what a thrill it was for me to be on that set.
Yeah.
Because I could feel the excitement of everyone.
Yeah.
It was like almost part of history.
It is pretty much. We've never had a TV show, you know.
But you're all directors, writers,
yeah,
producers, all native.
Yeah. And you have to give FX credit for taking
sure.
risk.
Yeah.
And saying, Sterling, go do your thing, you know.
It was a real thrill. I felt honored, you know, and you could just feel this excitement.
Yeah.
Where it's almost like, you know, it was. It is the electricity of actual representation,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, from top to bottom.
Right.
Except the network.
Well.
It's never going to happen.
No, yeah.
There's... Still got the old white guys at the network.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and it's a great time, Mark. It really is for everybody. So
yeah, so what are the first roles, dude? What are you doing?
You
TV?
Know, the native yelling on the horse kind of stuff. You know, native number one sitting by the teepee.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And I was playing, because I look Latino, I played a bunch of gang member parts on like The Shield and
stuff
like that, you know.
And you liked it?
Yeah, it was work, man. I was working, you know, and I was paying my bills.
Yeah.
So.
And then the drugs just crept back in?
Crept back in.
And you kept a habit for a decade?
For about a decade. Finally, it got to a point where I couldn't do anything, so.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Just hold up in the house?
Called the agent, said, don't send me on anything.
I don't look good.
I mean, you know, we all got war stories, man. I got some good ones, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you had to pull out and clean up again?
I did. Yeah, I finally did.
Did you go back to Nebraska again?
No, I stayed here.
Oh, you
which
did?
I really didn't think I was going to be able to do that.
Hmm.
But I was able to do it with, I just locked myself into the whole thing. And
you didn't check in again?
Oh, of course I checked in, but
for
the initial detox.
Because you got, was that the first time you got strung out for real though? Like in a sense where you're like, fuck.
Yeah.
Now I got to get out from under this. I got to do the physical withdrawal and all that shit.
Yeah. Yeah. The opiates were a motherfucker.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
They're killing everybody.
Yeah, now. Yeah, ooh. Definitely. I mean, they did then, but...
You got out.
So now.
We got out early.
I agree. Yeah.
Dude, you could just, you know, any pill.
Yeah.
You don't know.
You know what I love is, we both know Jerry.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and...
I just
and
had him on, yeah.
Permanent Midnight was,
yeah.
Yeah, that was it. That was what I was doing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But did you know him when you were out?
No, I met Jerry. Not even in. I met him at the gym.
Oh, over at the Hollywood Y?
Yeah, with the Hollywood Y. I knew who he was. I read every book he's ever written.
Yeah.
I'm reading
999
right
now. That's good, yeah.
Yeah,
it's funny. I had him on here for that.
He's amazing, man. That guy is so talented. It's just unbelievable.
He's great. Yeah, I was just texting with him. I don't know where I'd be without that guy. He's been a real sober guidepost.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah.
There's always one guy in your corner that's like, that's the guy. You know, he's my guy. You know, it's like nothing I can't talk to him about.
Yeah. I would love to work with Jerry one day. I really would.
Yeah. Hopefully it'll happen.
Yeah. Close.
With just that last thing?
Yeah.
What, is that show still going?
Yeah, we got a second season.
What's it called?
It's called Dark Winds.
Oh,
it's on AMC.
You're working a lot.
Things are good.
Was there ever a time where you had... Because, you know, I talk to people from different ethnic backgrounds, and there's always this sort of like, you know, the feeling of being, of limitations and mm-hmm. typecasting.
Sure.
Was there a point where you pushed back on that?
In the last probably 10 years.
Yeah.
I've been kind of pushing back on it a little bit. I'd rather stay away from... Feathers and leathers, we call it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, if Kevin Costner called me I'd probably go back on that horse, but
literally.
Yeah, I mean, I did Feathers and Leathers on Westworld, but it was such a different kind of character that I did on. He's first off, he's a robot.
It's, sure,
it was like these an image of what these people who made Westworld thought a savage native was, kind of thing. And then you realize he's not, and he's a robot, and he's anyway.
Did a lot of
stuff
those.
Like that. I mean, that's something unique like that, but a typical kind of old Western.
Yeah.
You know, I'd rather do contemporary.
Yeah, sure.
Job. So
I thought, like, for me, like, when I first saw, I thought Powwow Highway was a good movie.
Oh, it was a great movie, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the one that kind of like that was what I talked to Sterling about that too, where I realized like there's this whole world that we just are not,
yeah,
in.
Yeah, yeah. Gary Farmer and A. Martinez.
Yeah,
and, yeah. It was a great film, as well as I like Thunderheart as well when it first came out, which was a John Fusco film, Graham Greene.
Oh yeah,
Val Kilmer.
What was the reaction to the wolves?
I mean,
what's the movie called again?
There's mixed reaction.
What's it
called? It's Dances with Wolves.
Yeah.
I mean, Costner's a good filmmaker.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think he is. I think he's extremely talented.
Sure.
But
sure.
You know, a lot of people thought it was a white savior movie. And
oh, right. Because yeah. I think that's right. Because we mocked it in the episode of
But this is the first time you actually saw natives speaking a language throughout the whole movie, which was the Lakota language.
Yeah,
and so it broke down a lot of barriers. So I try to always look at it.
Yeah, like from that positive.
Got me in the business.
Yeah,
you know.
Really, oh, really? Did. You're like, yeah. We can do it.
Yeah, first moved out here. Dances came out, and I was like, I think doors are going to open up for everybody, and they did for a lot of us.
And what was the what was a Longmire show?
Longmire was a A&E show we did for 3 seasons. Then Netflix picked it up for another 3 seasons. Just basically kind of a contemporary Western sheriff based on Craig Johnson's books called Longmire.
Oh, yeah.
Which he's a Wyoming
author. Looks like that had a good run.
It did. 6 seasons. It was a great show. Great people to work with. Craig Johnson's an amazing writer. It's kind of similar to Dark Winds a little bit.
Yep.
Dark Winds is based on Tony Hillerman books about two Navajo cops.
Yep.
And Longmire was based on a kind of a Western setting, Wyoming.
Yep.
And we shot that down in Santa Fe for 6 seasons.
And you did the Fargos?
I did the second season of Fargo.
Yeah.
Worked with Noah Hawley, which was amazing.
Yeah?
Yeah. You don't know what you're going to get. You know, you're getting each script each episode, and you're wondering if you're going to die or not, and you have no idea what, you know, where Noah's going to take this season, and he ended up taking the character quite far, and it kind of was a breakout character for me, too. And I started working constantly after that show, so.
Yeah?
Yeah, I haven't stopped.
And you love it?
Yeah, no, I do, Mark. I mean, you know, I'm getting up there, and you know, I'm kind of trying to figure out what I want to do for the rest of my life.
Me too, dude.
Yeah, I know. Literally trying to figure out what do I want to do for the rest of my life? How do I want to spend the next 20
years? Walking up here talking about getting out of California for different reasons.
I know, right?
I'm afraid that there's going to be a water panic and everyone's going to be killing each other over, you know, water. And you're like, I just want to pay taxes.
Jesus, the taxes are crazy here.
Yeah.
I mean, I never really looked into it until recently and realized how high they really are, you know?
Yeah, I don't know, man. How old are you? Do you say?
Somewhere up there.
Yeah. I'm going to be 59 this month.
I'm 55.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I just started.
56 next in October.
I officially started looking old, I think, about a year ago.
Yeah.
You
notice it.
Yeah. Right? That hair's going.
Yeah. I feel old. I it's more noticeable now. You know, there was one day when I woke up and it's like, yeah, you're old now.
Fuck.
The immortality's right there, man.
Yeah, that's how we started.
Yeah.
The mortality thing. Yeah. The way I think about it more than anything else is sort of like, well, I got to get rid of all this shit. I got a lot of shit. Someone's going to have to get rid of it.
Yeah, yeah. No, I hear you.
There's people with more shit than me.
You're funny. You know? It's funny because my buddy's going through the same thing. I'm going through the same thing, too. I've literally got stuff that it would take me a few days.
Yeah.
Everything I own could go in the garbage.
Yeah, right.
My computer.
Yeah.
I got one old guitar. Some pictures on the wall. That's about it.
That's what you got?
Yeah.
You got rid of everything?
No, I got a lot of shit.
But that's what you need.
It's all going to go in the garbage,
right. Yeah. It's just like there's a weird thing because like part of me is sort of like, well, have someone come over here and sell it or, you know, give it away. Or I don't know what you do with this stuff, but I don't like throwing things away.
Then where would you go, though?
I'm thinking, I know where I'm going, dude. If I live and I hold on to the money, I'm going to fucking Vancouver, dude.
Are you really?
Fuck yeah.
Canada.
Yes.
Have you lived up there?
No.
It rains a lot up there, man.
I don't give a fuck.
It's beautiful up there, man.
I was just in Tofino for 4 days.
Where's Tofino at?
It's on Vancouver Island.
Oh, okay.
It's, you know, beautiful.
And is that where you want to end up?
Well, yeah. I'm trying to work it out because I don't think anything's going to get any better here. And
here you're talking about the fucking water stuff.
This is water, but the
I thought you just want to move up there because it's beautiful.
Oh no, water and fascism. There's big problems. that we're heading into.
I know how to get over that border because I lived on that border.
I'm gonna try and do it legally.
I know the
tunnel,
I know the trails, bro.
I lived
right on the border for 10 years.
In which state?
In outside of Browning, Montana.
Oh, that's right there.
Yeah, it's literally 20 miles from the border.
And you can just get around the guard post.
Yeah, there's ways.
they catch you now, though.
I know.
You got your phone on you. They're going to track you.
I know, right? They're probably tracking me after they listen to your podcast, here, man.
That's the guy.
I know. That's him.
But here's what I'm thinking. I'd like to find a place, a city in the States that's comfortable and has water. And, you know, the thing is like, because I do this show, you know, I'm sort of tethered to, because I like to talk to people in person and this is where people come through. So as long as I am doing this, it's going to have to be, you know, New York or LA, or I'm going to have to do a lot of, you know, Zoom stuff, which I don't love doing. I think it's better.
Yeah.
So you know, 2.5 years or between 2 and 3 years from now, if I start thinking ahead, like, you know, there's little smaller cities that I've found appealing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's easier for you, dude. I mean, you don't have to do anything out of your garage, and you can fly places.
Yeah.
What are you thinking?
I don't know. I'm thinking, I've gone up to Montana, looked around.
Oh, yeah.
Been to Wyoming. Wyoming has no state tax.
No people either. It's perfect.
No income tax. No. It's very small. Santa Fe's beautiful. I spend a lot of time in Santa Fe.
The water's not going to last there.
I don't think it's going to happen in our lifetime, brother.
I don't know. How many pictures of a half-empty Lake Mead have to see? They're going to be like, found another body.
So what happens if it...
Good question. I don't think anyone knows. I just know they're not going to tell us until the day before.
Yeah, right.
This is not a water restriction. Do not use your water. Because bad shit will come out of the faucet. I grew up in New Mexico. I thought about New Mexico a lot.
That's right.
I was looking out there, you know, in Cerrillos between Albuquerque and Santa Fe.
Yep.
Looked at a little place where, you know, like I drove a mile and a half off the 14, you know, into this beautiful little pocket, you know, and I stood out there on the porch of this little house with no cell reception.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just listened to the silence, and I thought, this is amazing.
Yeah.
And about 3 minutes later, I'm like, I can't fucking live here. How far am I from a supermarket? Where am I going to go for coffee?
I get like that too, man. I really
just go, what are you going to do just sitting out there by yourself? Yeah. You know, like going like, what? What do you do?
Convenience, you know. You can't go up to the coffee shop and
sit. I just like going to supermarkets.
Yeah. No, I hear you.
It's
a beautiful area, though, Cerrillos.
Sure. It's great. You know, if you can live like that.
Hippie town there.
Madrid. It's all right. Yeah.
Madrid.
A little creepy.
Madrid.
It's Madrid, yeah.
Don't call it Madrid.
It's a little ghost town.
Yeah.
But it's a mining town. Yeah. Well, so is Cerrillos, I think, is a little mining town.
Yeah.
But like, I was just in Pittsburgh, and I'm like, this is nice.
Yeah.
When was the last time you were in Pittsburgh?
No, I haven't been in Pittsburgh ever.
It's great.
I live right there in Ohio, too.
Beautiful little city.
Yeah.
And it's kind of coming, I think there's a new life to it, and it's kind of stunning. It's an old-ass city.
Yeah.
It's got water, bridges, hills, you know, nice houses, shitty houses.
Yeah, there's a lot of you know, a lot of people are moving out of New York and out of California and
Tulsa.
Tulsa?
I don't know.
I like Tulsa. Reminds me of Omaha quite a bit.
It's great, but you know, you start to realize, like, okay, I've just walked the four blocks, and I'm no longer in the city. So,
but you're in the thick of Los Angeles. How many times a week do you actually leave the house, Mark?
I go out.
Do you go out a lot?
Well, I go do comedy. I thank God for the Comedy Store.
Well,
I'll go do it every night.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. And then, like, I go out around here, and like, I'm going to go to Highland Park today. I forget why. I have a reason. What do I got to pick up?
Does the traffic get on you?
Dude, I won't go to the West Side.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going, you know, I wouldn't even take a meeting.
Santa Monica, where?
I'm not going to Sony in Culver City.
It's like, another fucking planet.
To let that role go.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to have to give that role to somebody else. I'm not going to make it over to the West Side at 4 p.m.
Oh, yeah. Back in the day when we're really hustling and going to 3 or 4 auditions a week and... You go hit those commercial auditions out in Santa Monica, and you're like, oh, it's Friday, it's 4 o'clock.
It's my whole day.
And you're fucking stuck in there.
Got to bring a tent.
It's gridlock.
It's the worst. Yeah, I didn't do a lot of that, but I just remember going, you know, it's always sort of like, yeah, we're going to do a general meeting at 4 in Santa Monica. 4 p.m? I'd rather you schedule one for 7 a.m. and I'll leave at 4 in the morning. And then at least I'll have a whole day to get back.
Yeah.
But so yeah, I thought Pittsburgh. I like Tulsa. I don't think Texas is my thing. But I think I would go with the New Mexico dream. But you kind of have it still, the Santa Fe.
A little bit. I mean, I spend so much time down there. I mean, I just got back from there. I go back on Friday for a birthday, and then I go back late September for 4 months.
For what?
Dark Winds.
Oh, that's where they shoot it.
Yeah, so I'm down there all the time, and
people
and
buy houses down there all the time when they're down there all the time.
Yeah, I'm thinking. Maybe getting something down there.
Santa Fe, but not Albuquerque.
No.
Yeah, I grew up in Albuquerque.
I don't want to live in Albuquerque.
I guess people don't really love Albuquerque. It's weird because I had this idea that's sort of like, I'm going to go home.
Yeah.
I went through all the life changes there. You know, I was there from second grade through high school.
Yeah.
And like, I kept going back because my old man's there and he's losing his mind, you know, but I go visit. And I kept thinking, like, yeah, it's going to be all right. And then, like, every time I'm there, I'm like, I don't fucking even leave the hotel. I go eat 2 Mexican meals.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I'm like, what the fuck am I going to do here? Right?
You're stuck in L.A., brother.
Am I? For at least 2 years.
No, I think you're here for good, man. What are you going to do, Mark? I mean, L.A. is great. It's not, you're not going to run out of water. Not in Los Angeles.
What do you have a source on this? You're just saying that with confidence because you believe the illusion.
Yeah, right.
I don't know, man. But maybe Pacific Northwest. Maybe I don't know, man. I don't know. But in terms of the getting older thing, I do know that I would like to not work. And people are like, you could not work. I'm like, I'm not sure that's true. I would like to go somewhere and just enjoy peace of mind. But people go, isn't that an inside job? Like, I don't know. If I could successfully pull my brain out of this race, out of the competition, out of the proving the ego driven shit.
Right, right.
I guess that's a big trick, isn't it?
It's a big one, man.
Yeah.
Struggle with that one every day, you know. How bored would I be if I went fishing for next year? You know?
We're going to buy all the stuff.
Yeah, get
out on the boat.
Stuff and the boat, the big, the bass boat, fly
the vest,
rod.
You got the vest.
The vest.
Yeah, with the stuff.
Yeah.
Got your flies. Maybe you can start tying your own flies. That'll eat up a couple hours.
Yeah.
Are you that guy? Are you the guy? Are you the fly guy?
I would
guy?
Learn, yes. It's actually a lot of fun. It really is.
You've done some fly fishing?
Yeah, I've done some fly fishing. I've fished when I was younger a lot. Mm. That's how I got sober. One of the first times was I went fishing every day.
Yeah?
Yeah. Bass fishing.
Nebraska. That sounds like a movie. It's kind of like, is that a river runs through it? Was that kinda the fly like fishing that movie? Yeah. Except like, it's just a guy sweating.
It kept me away from it, you know? I don't know. I don't, you know, again, I'm trying to figure out what we want to do for the rest of our lives, you know?
I'm still trying. It's hard for me. I don't even really know what makes me happy, to be honest with you. I do kind of. You know, I like to play guitar. I like to cook. But I'm just really sort of like accepting that stuff. Like, this is what, you know, these are the things that I find some joy in. Do you have those things?
I do.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Are any of them healthy?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah, they're healthy. I had to drop out of. I played racquetball for years.
Oh yeah,
I really got off on that. You know, for 20 years.
Fast game.
Yeah, it's very fast game. Kept getting shape and all that, but I had to drop off that a little bit because of health reasons. But yeah, I own motorcycles. I love.
Oh, yeah?
I love taking off and
driving
the bike. Yeah, I'll take off long distance and I'll do a month on the road.
Oh yeah,
on the motorcycle and
camp.
Can't no.
Oh.
Hotels for me. I've done that. I have camped, but you know, it's like
why
right? What am I sitting in this tent for?
Yeah, you know,
I could be in a hotel watching CNN or something.
Yeah. What kind of bikes you got?
I just got rid of two of them, but I have they're all Harley Davidsons.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's cool.
Harley.
Yeah, you got it,
brother.
Yeah,
got to ride a Harley.
So you'll wear the leather and feathers on the bike.
Just the leathers, no
just
feathers.
Just the leathers, no feathers.
No feathers, just the leathers.
All right.
Yeah.
Good talking to you, man.
You too, man.
There you go. That was me and Zahn McLaren. You can watch seasons 1 and 2 of Reservation Dogs on Hulu. And I'd also, if you could, like you to hang out for a second. Thanks.
Moin, wir sind die Footballerei. Ich bin Kutsche.
Ich bin Flo.
Und ich bin Daniel.
Wir sind aber noch viele mehr. In der Footballerei gibt es American Football Freischnauze, überwiegend die NFL, in ganz vielen verschiedenen Formaten. Da ist für alle was dabei.
Das Frühstücksei zum Beispiel gibt es jeden Montag ab 5 Uhr als Podcast. In der Saison natürlich mit den ersten Reaktionen auf die Spiele des Wochenendes und in der Offseason versorgen wir dich hier mit allen frischen News aus dem NFL-Kosmos.
Dazu gibt es die bunte Welt der NFL in Kutsches Zirkus, hochspannende Kriminalfälle bei Hall of Crime und das Thema der Woche während der Saison in der Footballerei. Show.
Also, wenn dich American Football fasziniert, wirst du die große Auswahl in der Footballerei lieben. Wir freuen uns auf dich.
Look, folks, as I mentioned earlier, WTF Plus subscriptions are now completely ad-free. The handful of ads that were still hanging around on some recent episodes have expired. And this week, we're posting the latest Ask Mark Anything. We got a lot of great new questions, plenty of stuff I've never been asked before, and we'll post that on Tuesday. Go to the episode description on your podcast app and click on the link to subscribe, or go to WTFpod.com and click WTF Plus. And once again, I'll be in London doing a live WTF at the Bloomsbury Theater on Wednesday, October 19th, with comedian and writer David Baddiel. Tickets for that are on sale now. My stand-up shows at the Bloomsbury are on Saturday and Sunday, October 22nd and 23rd. I believe they're sold out, but you can check. Dublin, Ireland, I'm at Vicker Street on Wednesday, October 26th. Oklahoma City, I'm at the Tower Theater on Wednesday, November 2nd. I'm in Dallas, Texas at the Majestic Theater on Thursday, November 3rd. San Antonio at the Tobin Center for the Performing Arts for 2 shows on Friday, November 4th, and Houston at the Cullen Theater at Wortham Center on Saturday, November 5th. I'm in Long Beach, California at the Carpenter Performing Arts Center on Saturday, November 12th, Eugene, Oregon at the Holt Center for the Performing Arts on Friday, November 18th, and Bend, Oregon at the Tower Theater on Saturday, November 19th. In December, I'm in Asheville, North Carolina at the Orange Peel for 2 shows on Friday, December 2nd, and then Nashville, Tennessee, I'm at the James K. Polk Center on Saturday, December 3rd, and my HBO special taping is at Town Hall in New York City on Thursday, December 8th. Go to WTFpod.com/tour for all dates and ticket info. Whew. All right. Let's play some guitar. Thank you.
Boomer lives. Monkey and LaFonda, cat angels are everywhere.